Absolutely a pleasure to have you here to talk about yourself, your book, Energize, and the great work that you do. If you could, let's start with who you are and how you came, a little bit of your journey and how you came to be impacting people the way that you are.
Sure. So I grew up here in the United Kingdom. My parents were Malaysian immigrants into the country, and they came to the UK to seek better education and a better way of life. And as I grew up through the British educational system, I had this mistaken belief that success would be defined by my job title: be a banker, be an accountant, be a lawyer, be a doctor. Titles which were very prestigious and were looked up upon and also paid very well. And so when I graduated from university, which was at the London School of Economics, I ended up working in the financial services industry at what was probably the worst possible time. It was the middle of 2007, a year before the global financial crisis took off. And to make things a little more interesting, the company I began my career with was Lehman Brothers, which collapsed into
Heard of them in the past tense.
yeah, which collapsed into administration around sort of 14 or so months after I joined. And even though at the time, as with any redundancy or restructuring or change in an organization, even though at the time it was painful and full of uncertainty, in hindsight, it was a beautiful blessing in disguise, because for me, it kickstarted the longest journey that we as humans make, the inches from our heads to our hearts. Never an easy journey, but the most important and fulfilling that we will ever embark on. And so I began asking myself questions such as, what did success mean to me? And what sort of impact did I want to have in the world? And so the full process of wanting to do something different started in that moment, but really accelerated in my second job, where I had a very toxic environment, a very toxic culture, and informs the story that I begin the first chapter of my book with. And it was that that gave me the next catalyst to want to move into a kinder role. So when I mean kinder role within finance, a more project-driven role where I had the time outside of work and on weekends to explore what I really wanted to do. And it
And
would
if
be.
I oh go ahead. I was going to stop you just for a second because you alluded to this situation and this toxic environment and maybe some of the ways that you coped with that. And in that chapter, there's this dramatic scene of you coming home with, I think she was your then girlfriend, now lovely wife, and you were in no state. Can you share a little bit about that? Because I think sometimes people think, oh, high power job. Then you had this light bulb moment, but actually there were some personal things that you were struggling with that also maybe was a catalyst.
Yeah, so the second job I went into, on the outside, it sounded great. I was a junior trader working in a hedge fund, which on paper sounds like a very glamorous role. The reality was, it was anything but. I was the junior on the team. And so the reality was, I was like a tea boy. I was getting my manager's lunches. I was doing all the admin work, even though I wasn't the secretary. I was doing all the back office support. And I would be often the first in the office and the last one to leave. And because this future that I had imagined when I was at university was unfolding very differently to anything that I had imagined, I began to get directionless. I lost energy in terms of my physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual. And I would try and numb that pain by escaping the reality of where I was through drink, through partying, through, wasting my weekends away watching TV series, anything just to give me a short shot of enjoyment before I had to go back to work on a Monday morning. And so I realized that the first thing I had to do was address my physical energy, because I was suffering from lack of sleep. I wasn't moving my body enough, and I was just eating junk and takeaway. And in order to do that, I needed to change the work environment I was in. And I said to myself, anywhere must be better than this. And so I just made it my main goal to move to a job that wasn't as pressured, that would give me some breathing room to find myself again. And so it was a process of not going straight from that to what I do now, but it would be a process of another few years before I would eventually exit the industry.
And talk about, well, I want you to guide, but talk about, I think, a little bit, again, when we meet our interview authors and successful coaches and global leaders at this point, some people, well, you know, people can go, oh, there was that aha moment, and then magically things transformed and he was on his way and he discovered everything and he was fit the next day. And what you just said there, I think, is also important to kind of expand on this timeline. Like, it isn't just, I wake up, I have a revelation, and then it's a 180.
I think that there's a saying I often share with my clients and audiences, which is think in decades, plan in months, and execute daily.
Nice.
And I already accepted at an early stage that if I was going to switch career, it would not happen overnight. I had to be thinking at least 10 years ahead. And so what I did when I had this time, more time to myself in the evenings and weekends, is I used that time to explore what I wanted to do. I went out to events and seminars. I read different books. I watched different videos on YouTube to get inspiration. And I just started experimenting. And it wasn't until I saw this advert come up on my social media about coaching that I thought, I'm curious to want to go to this 2-day seminar, which cost me nothing. So it was free to attend.
Okay, and wow, that's rare.
And the only thing I would be losing was my time. And so I thought, this sounds interesting, because I've always enjoyed helping people, but I had imagined it was just being a good friend. Mm-hmm. And I didn't think you could actually get paid for helping people in the way that I saw that this event was describing. So I went along with an open mind to learn all about coaching as a skill and a potential profession and career. And by the end of that weekend, I came back and I said, I want to sign myself up to this qualification. I want to study towards being a professional coach. And that took me another 2.5 years, to qualify, balancing that on the side of my full-time job. And it would take another couple of years before I fully quit the corporate industry. So it wasn't until 2017 that I quit the corporate industry. And a reality I really want to share with the listeners and readers is, it wasn't like I went, okay, I'm going to start my business and become an entrepreneur. Next day I quit, and then all of this suddenly happened. It was a process of going back and forth in my head of should I, shouldn't I, because it was full of unknowns and it would be very risky. Mm-hmm. But I came to this dilemma where I was working a full-time job, 9 to 5, and I had 3 coaching clients. And if I were to get a 4th, my coaching would suffer, and so would my day job. So I got to this dilemma, which for me was a big turning point. Do I, option A, do I continue with my 9 to 5 job with the visibility of a steady paycheck and only keep 3 clients? Or do I quit my steady 9 to 5 paycheck and see how big I can build this?
And I'm just going to stop you for a second and guess that while you're looking at that A or B scenario, the fulcrum's not in the middle, that you've got more of a steady income at this point than you do that you're making from your coaching. And so that's a gamble. That's a risk. That's really something you have to step out in faith, courage, belief, drive, determination. What was it that you finally decided, okay, I'm going to, as I say, jump without that parachute and make it on my way down?
Yeah, I think that, as I said, the process wasn't easy. It lasted about 4 or 5 months of going back and forth in my head. But I think there were a couple of factors that nudged it. One is this belief. I realized, and it's something I share in the book, that there are always 2 sales that happen. The second is selling you to others, and the first is selling you to you. And until you can sell you to you, selling you to others will be always a challenge. And so I had to start trusting that I had something of value to offer the world. If I didn't, then why am I doing this? Why am I deciding to take this leap of faith into something completely unknown. So that was the first thing I worked on, is building that belief and trust that I had what it took. And the second was, I remember coming across this Aristotle quote that said, we have two lives, and the second one begins the moment you realize you have only one.
Huh.
And I said to myself, what would I regret if I took this decision or this decision? And I realized the regret of the latter would be vastly higher. And when I took all of that into consideration, I said, let's do it. Let's see where I can take this. And also, I cannot not talk about the support of my wife, because, you know, she also had a 9-to-5 job. You know, she's now also an entrepreneur. But at the time, she also had a 9-to-5 job. And she said to me, Simon, if in about 18 to 20 months, things aren't where you would like it, I'm still in the job and I can support you. You know, we're doing this as a team. If you win, we win together. If you lose, we learn together. And so we got to approach this as a team. And I think having that reassurance, but also having somebody else believe in you,
yeah,
it's sometimes what we need at the beginning of a journey where we are a complete amateur. And so I started that journey, and all I wanted to do at the beginning, just to kind of show people how none of this was all planned, is that I just wanted to be a successful coach. Now, of course, now I do speaking and writing and lots of other things, but at the beginning, it was just to be a successful coach. But here's the thing. Once you start on doing something that you are passionate about, that you really enjoy, suddenly lots of other paths of opportunity begin to open. And not even 2 years into my coaching journey, I remember one client said to me, she said, Simon, I really enjoy our coaching. I was wondering, do you do any speaking? Because our company is putting together a series of leadership events, and I think you would be a great speaker about the topics that they want to share with the audience. I love challenges. And so I said, sure, let's do it. And again,
had you ever spoken on a stage, not just giving a presentation at the your hedge fund or at the Lehman Brothers, had you ever actually created a keynote or spoken or been in a live in-person event of, I'm assuming, more than five people?
Sure. So I had spoken in some small community events, but okay, these were 20, 30 people max sort of events, and they were all unpaid. But
yes,
this was the first big event that was paying me, and as a result would have a lot higher expectations.
Of course.
And so,
which equates into more pressure.
Yeah. and again, this is a story I share in one of the chapters of my book, where I did this for the very first time.
Yeah.
And again, I had no idea what was going to happen, but I did it, and I delivered to the best of my ability, and hopefully, fingers crossed, they would enjoy it. And that would become one of, again, those turning points which opened me to get more inquiries about speaking at companies and conferences and lots of other setups that were being put together. And again, it wasn't something that I planned. And very quickly, even though I started 80% of my time focused on coaching, very quickly it flipped, so that now 80% of my time was now doing public speaking, and 20% was the coaching and all the other stuff. And I love speaking for this one reason, even though it's a cliche. I believe that this cliche is true. The more you speak, the more you speak. And so what happened is I started to get more invitations and more referrals. And before I knew it, in 2019, I got an invitation to be interviewed on BBC and Sky News, which was amazing, to be interviewed on national news. I mean, it was only, I think, 4 to 6 minutes, something like that. But to me, that was great airtime to be on national television for that long. And then that opened up again, lots of other paths and opportunity. And then in April 2020, as the world was entering its first lockdown, and I became a father for the first time, I then got an offer from the world's biggest publishing house, Penguin, to write my first book. And I mean, that was a crazy journey in itself to navigate writing a book while being a parent in the background of COVID. And since that was published last year, it's been an absolute ride. I'm not going to lie, it's been an absolute ride.
And the book is called Energize. Mm. And it is about your journey and also about great tips about why energy is important, how you can harness energy. And what I really want you to talk about, energy is a concept in terms of how we can really use it. And then I would love to focus on that chapter I mentioned to you at the top of our discussion before we went on air, was the idea of these seemingly maybe small incremental things where you can really electrify your environment through making different choices on it. Even so, it seems like maybe that's not energy. Oh no, it is. So tell me about energy and tell me about maybe some of the steps that anybody, no matter if they want to be a coach or a public speaker or write a book, anybody can do to energize their lives wherever they are.
Sure. So first of all, energy is an idea that we all know about, but few of us actually address in our everyday lives. So just to give you a bit of context, if you practice yoga, you might call this prana. If you come from Maori culture, you might call it mana. If you come from my Chinese culture, you will call it chi. If you are a fan of the Star Wars film franchise, you will call it the Force. Now, whatever word or term we use to describe it, we're talking about the same thing, which is energy as a life force. Without energy, you can't do much. You can get given all the tips, the strategies, the hacks, and the lessons, but without the right energy, you can't put it into action. And when I talk about energy, I'm really seeing it through four dimensions: your physical, your mental, your emotional, and your spiritual. Now, physical is the one we all know about. When we begin every new year, we always talk about physical energy resolutions. So things such as, I want to lead a healthier life this year. I'm going to sign up to the gym, or I'm going to eat healthier. I'm going to get more rest. So these are the things that are obvious and that nearly all of us talk about throughout the year, especially at the beginning of a new year. But the other three areas are often put to one side. So mental energy is cultivating a mindset that will allow us to achieve our goals and aims. It is also about our ability to focus in an ocean of distraction and the ability to express our creative potential. Emotional energy is how we relate to ourselves, to others, and the world around us. And that is why somebody's emotional intelligence is so important, especially when they are in a position of leadership. Mm-hmm. You know, you can get hired for your IQ, but you can get very quickly fired for your lack of EQ. And it shows just how important emotional energy is. And then the final one is spiritual energy. Now, a great way to imagine spiritual energy is this. If you look at society around you, what you notice is that many are exhausted, not because they are physically doing too much, but often because they are doing too little of the things that bring them joy and because they are running someone else's race.
Explain that.
Yeah, so when you are low on spiritual energy, the work that you are doing is not aligned to who you are. It goes against your values, and you don't feel you can express your gifts and your talents. And we might feel that manifest in tension or frustration inside of our body and our mind. But when you are high on spiritual energy, that's when you feel in flow, because the work that you do is meaningful to you, and you are in an environment that allows you to express your potential.
That's great stuff. And so now take those four elements. I know part of me wants to just go do a deep dive on all of the four elements, but I also want to spend the time that we have to go into some of those practical things that people can do to electrify their environment wherever they are.
Sure. So I'm going to, as I said, I can give tips on each of those four dimensions, but I'm going to just share maybe two or three to give you a flavor of some of the things that you can do. So this next exercise will be very powerful for you, actually, especially powerful for you if you are currently feeling frustrated or going through a bad patch in your personal or professional life. And this activity involves three steps. The first is to write down the name of somebody that you can be truly grateful for. Think of the first person that comes to your mind. And this could be a partner, a colleague, a manager, a son or daughter, an acquaintance, or a close friend. The second step is to write down in as much detail as possible why you chose that person.
Mm.
The detail here is important. So what did he or she do for you that has made you the person you are today? In what ways would their absence from your life have impacted who you are today? And so on. So really flesh out the detail of why this person came to your mind. And then the third step is where the magic happens. The first step is for you to pick up the phone and to call that person, reading out word for word
what you wrote
in step two. Now, if that is a little uncomfortable for you, at a minimum, what you want to do is to send a voice note to that person. And here is why. If you send a letter or a text or an email to someone, their brain doesn't know the emotional state or the energy that you wrote it in. And so we have to make up and fill in the gaps mm-hmm. of how that is being communicated. And this is why often emails and texts can be misinterpreted.
Right.
You send a minimum of a voice note, people can feel your energy.
Right.
They can feel the emotion for your words. And emotion is nothing but energy in motion. And it doesn't just benefit the recipient, it benefits you, the giver, as well.
Oh, I love that, Simon. And I love the idea, especially that you made a real emphasis around the importance of the energy that we can evoke in our voice when we are translating how we felt that that was prompted. And I can imagine that that person listening is getting the benefit of all that energy. And then what's great, I think, too, is in that they're receiving something and you're receiving their reaction back in return. And you're just doing this fantastic electrifying feedback loop that I want to hear real quickly who you've done that with or who you've encouraged to do that. And you've heard as a result, how it's impacted them as well as the person that received it. Because I think a little story around that probably would be really, really uplifting to many.
Yeah, no, it's incredible. I mean, I've got so many audiences to practice that. Again, I can't check everyone, but the people who have shared it with me, it's been amazing. I mean, funnily enough, they ended up sending me a voice note to share their experience of sharing it with
them. Practicing what they've learned right back to the teacher.
Or their manager. I still remember one came up to me at a book signing. And she said to me, Simon, I still remember you shared that tip on elevating our emotional energy immediately, this gratitude exercise. And I did it. And the moment I stopped recording, I just fell into tears because I realized in that moment, I'd been focusing too much on the things I didn't have and forgot to appreciate all the abundance that I already have. And that taught me, and just that's just one example, but hearing that again and again and again taught me that gratitude really is the gateway drug to abundance. It reminds us how much we already have. I always say to people, yes, work towards your visions and your goals, but never forget how far you have come and what you already have in your life. Because we can be so quick to forget about those things and think we always have to be doing in order to feel productive, or we always have to be doing in order to feel like we're going somewhere. But actually, there is so much blessing we already have in our lives and around us that we don't stop to appreciate them enough. So that's one of the exercises I love sharing and getting people to do. I saw you about to say something, so I'll pause there for a moment.
I was going to say, in the essence of time, unfortunately, we need to wrap up. So I was going to ask you, first of all, how grateful I am for your time, how you're sharing the story of the evolution that it took for you to be the salesperson of your benefit in order to make that leap. Mm-hmm. And I think that as that first foundational block was really important. And then it didn't happen overnight. and the support of your wife, and then how you wrote a book while you were a brand new father, and now these real exercises that we can do to begin to see relatively quickly the impact that harnessing our energies and reaching out to someone else and leaving something that's more impactful than a note or a text is that voice. And I do a lot of work on purposeful communications and the power of voice and body language, and that we have more we can take control of probably than we think we do. And we have more that we can be grateful for than maybe we thought we could. Is there something new on the horizon for you? The book's is still relatively new, but I hate to be one of those people that says, well, what's next? But you know how this type of stuff goes. I'd love to hear what's next, and then some final encouraging words that from your experience, people who are reading and listening.
Sure. So a couple of final, very quick things, just in the back Please. Of what you said, Gina. So I think what we talked about with regards to your work and the voice notes and the way we share and express our gratitude all comes together under this word communication. You know, one of the stories I share with leadership teams is that when Warren Buffett was asked, what is the most important skill in business and leadership that we can develop? He said one word, communication. And he pointed to a wall in his office and he said, look up that wall. There is only one certificate I have hanging up on that wall, and it is the one I received from the Dale Carnegie Institute for Public Speaking. And he said, communication in all of its forms is critical to influence, but also to move people towards action and get the best out of the people that we lead. So I just wanted to remark on that with regards to communication. And on environment, which I know we touched on briefly a couple of times, I'm often asked, what is the fastest way to make progress in any goal we have?
Everybody wants that. What's that 1 minute fix, Simon?
The fastest way is this: design an environment around you that makes it impossible not to succeed. So when I talk about this environment, I'm alluding to not just the people you spend time with, but what you read, what you watch, what you listen to, who you follow on social media, even your physical spaces. All of this influences not only how you see yourself, but what you see as possible. And then onto the question of what next, I'm looking to a bit more speaking work internationally, especially given the last year, you know, restrictions were lifted, and now it's great to be able to travel more and to share my message with different audiences. I'm also working, and it's very early at the moment, towards a few exciting projects. So one of the things I wanted to do with the launch of my book is to create an experience like no other. And so when my book launched, we partnered with the best bar in the world to create a cocktail called Energize, inspired by my book. So for 4 weeks after publication, if you went to the bar and you ordered the Energize cocktail, it would be presented on a copy of my book. And then we put together one of the world's first book launches in the metaverse, which was crazy.
I saw that. Was remarkable. I saw the images of that.
So it was crazy. So I love expressing my creative energy through these collaborations and through these innovative ideas. And so two of them I'm working on at the moment is I'm looking to partner with a renowned artist, an abstract artist, a painter, and we're looking to create four pieces of art inspired by my book about energy, and then auction them off to raise funds for charity. And then we're also looking to put together one of the world's, if not the world's first, 8-course dining experience inspired by a leadership book. And I'm working with an incredible chef that has been on television to create an experience that will encompass all your senses. So those are some of the things that I'm working on.
I love the experiential element of leadership through art, through food, through a cocktail. Come on. I mean, you are taking humanity connections and making it so applicable in so many ways. Simon Alexander Ong, it has been an incredible, incredible pleasure to talk with you and learn from you. And I look forward to talking to you more. And wherever you are, you can get his book, Energize, where you get your books. I'm so delighted. Thank you.
Gina, thank you so much. This is-